This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Adjacent. You're listening to the Sports Adjacent.
Okay, I like that. I just learned something new today. Adjacent.
With Jason Leisure and Russell Dorsey on the House of L Network.
We're doing everything I dreamed of as an adjacent.
I was very... I didn't know what to expect necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I was surprised. Justin Fields seemed very happy to see me.
Familiar face.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm surprised he'd want to see anybody from the Chicago media. And I had a very professional relationship with him. Mm-hmm. But I was critical of him. I was absolutely out in front on they need to do better at quarterback. They need to move on from him, and they need to draft Caleb Williams. And when that's what you're writing all the time, and that's the tone of your questions all the time, I'm just doing my job and he's just doing his job. But I could see where that would wear on him. And I would sit here and tell you, hey, it's nothing personal. Like, my criticism of Justin Fields over the last couple of seasons wasn't anything like I was rooting against him or anything personal, but I'm criticizing something that's very personal to him, how he plays. It means, I mean, this is what he puts everything into. So I didn't know what to expect when because this was the first time I'd seen him or talked to him since he got traded, was this week. And I didn't know what to expect from that. Mm-hmm. And he seemed very pleased to see me. And we talked for a couple of minutes off to the side after, not on the record or anything, just
shooting
kind of
the shit.
Yeah, informal conversation, kind of about how things went. Mm-hmm. And clearing the air on anything that we needed to clear the air on with each other. And he, as he was when I covered him, couldn't have been more pleasant and professional.
I think when you're a professional athlete, it's like generally all the media is bad. And it's like the monster you know is better than the one you don't. And he doesn't really know that beat yet those people. But he knows the Chicago ones and been through the ringer with Chicago people. So, you know, it was his home as a professional for the first time. So you make those early connections, you know, good or bad, but you get familiar with them. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that he was like, yes, familiar face. We can reminisce, and maybe he can state my case for me that, you know, maybe I didn't get a 100% fair shake at this.
Well, that's part of it, I think, for any of these athletes is they don't have really any rebuttal when you criticize the performance. If you stick to what you can see, what everybody can see, hey, so-and-so struck out four times, there's nothing they can say back. There's nothing they would say back. I think they accept that. But when you're talking, especially in a sport like football where everything is so interconnected, there's so many moving parts, literally, I think he would say, well, you're focusing in on all these numbers and you're not emphasizing some of these reasons that I think are why I have those numbers. Now, he hasn't said that. He's taken the high road at every turn. And it's impressive to see somebody do that, because you forget talking to him that he's just turned 25. He has never at any point acted like a rookie, like a fresh out of college kid. Russ, this was interesting to me. There's been a couple of these this year for me, actually. This doesn't necessarily come up for you, I wouldn't think, as much now, but when you're covering a beat, it's this weird thing that happens when a key person gets traded or fired. They're just gone. And you don't know when the next time you're going to see them or talk to them is. You're there every day. I have seen every snap Justin Fields has ever taken in the NFL in person. And I have seen him every day that he's been in that locker room. and then he's gone. And it's the same for Matt Nagy. And neither of them, I had not seen either of them or talked to either of them until this year. And Matt Nagy, it's been a couple of years since he got fired.
Well, I know he remembers Bears. You.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah. You mother. Yeah.
It's a tough line to walk to do your job right. Be critical when criticism is warranted. And I think at many points it was warranted in the coaching performance of Matt Nagy and in the playing performance of Justin Fields. And the league has agreed with that, basically. Matt Nagy has not been hired for another head coaching job after he was fired. Justin Fields was not a trade market for him that showed you the NFL thinks he's a starting quarterback. And he might very well be. I don't think the Bears found the limit of what he could be. I don't think they did everything they could for him. But you have to be accurate. You have to be critical when criticism is warranted. The readership, the job demands that of you. But also, I care a lot about how I treat people. Mm-hmm. I am not trying to become friends with the people I cover. I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't aspire for that. But I want to be able to lay down at night knowing I treated people the right way. I was fair to people. I wasn't sneaky to anyone. That's why a lot of times my questions seem overly direct. It's because I don't want anyone to be surprised by how that gets used. I want them to know exactly the context we're talking about and not see it the next day and be like, oh, okay, I got suckered into that one. And that was the conversation really that I had with Matt Nagy back in February. And it was essentially the conversation I had with Justin Fields this week and Matt Nagy is older. He's been in the league longer. He's a coach. Maybe he understands it a little better than Justin Fields, who had just come from college where the media would have done nothing but celebrate him during his time at Ohio State. But you want those people to know there was nothing personal about it. And I like both of those guys as people, and I have a ton of respect for both of them as people. Matt Nagy could not have been more patient and calm and kind in his dealings with the media while everything was going wrong, very professional and respectful in his dealings with me. And Justin Fields, same thing. I couldn't say enough about how much I respect Justin Fields' character. And I hope for both of those people, because I like them, that they succeed. And that was the essence of what I told Justin Fields when we talked for a couple of minutes this week, is I appreciate your professionalism. I appreciate what a grown-up you were from the time you got here. Him and I think had one issue, and it was this past season where there was a question I asked him in a press conference after a game, and he didn't want to answer it. And he came right off the podium, right to my chair, and said, I didn't answer that because I felt like that was a very disrespectful question. And he could not, and I didn't intend it to be disrespectful. I don't remember exactly what it was. They were a disaster at the beginning of the season. I think it was the Chiefs game when they just got blown out of the building from the jump in that game.
In front of Taylor Swift.
And that was the first Taylor Swift game, right? And I told him, hey, I appreciate you saying that. I didn't intend it disrespectfully. Here's what I was trying to find out. And I am going to ask challenging questions, but I don't intend any disrespect for it. And he said, okay, I understand. We shook hands and we were good. That's incredibly mature.
Very much so.
That's incredibly professional. I don't know that I could handle myself that way in that situation. And I credit him for that. And I have a lot of respect for him as a person. And I hope that he does well in his career still. And I hope that he's happy. He seems very happy, by the way, to be with the Steelers. And I hope that he is, though. I hope that this works out for him the way he wants it to.
I got a question for Russ. Have you, in your career as a beat, has any athlete like just saw you and you know he just hated you? Like from jump, like, oh, this guy hates me. Or like after a while, you just pull up and like, oh, man, I got to deal with this Russ character.
No,
Have you done that to an athlete, but still have to maintain professionalism?
Oh, where I feel that way towards them?
Yeah, if you haven't felt that from an athlete,
have
you felt that?
They've never felt that way towards me, because similar to Jason, I try to treat people with respect. I think I'm really good at my job, and I think that comes across in how I do it. And so even in times where I have to be critical, in times where I've had to be critical over the years, there was never a moment where somebody would have felt disrespected. The one time, it was when me and David Ross would have these back and forths where I would ask something, he would shoot back at me, I'd shoot back at him to respond, not in a disrespectful way, but like, yo, like, this is why I asked this. Then we have our conversation after. But because Rossi always had respect for me, like, he knows that it's not coming from a disrespectful place. I know that Rossi had an edge to him, and it wasn't necessarily towards me all the time, right? And so there's respect there, but never had that, oh, here come Russ, right? I know reporters. One of them that I'm thinking of right now, a really good friend of mine, and Tone, you know him well. I think you guys used to be colleagues, that people did feel that way towards him. But no, I haven't had that personally. Did I ever have a moment where I felt that way towards an athlete where I'm like, here we go? I think sometimes when you can feel fakeness, you feel that way where, like, you know how somebody actually is, like fake nice guy. You see it coming. I think a lot, and people know. Then you have bad attitude guy. Like, sometimes I'm not expecting everybody to be nice all the time. But when you have that, when it's like that every day for you, it's just like, all right, dog, like, come on, chill out. I had a couple of those. Like, there are some, and Jason, you know that, and Tone, you know that too. You've been around this long enough. There's some natural grumps out there.
There, it's just like anywhere else. It's just like if you walked into your Portillo sober by there and started talking to the people at their tables while they were having their beef, you'd meet 90% would just be nice people or even great people. And then like 10% of them would be jerks. Yeah. And that's everywhere. That's
but this is different because you have to constantly be around these people. Like, it don't have to see this person at Portillo's a bunch.
I think it is, to Jason's point, I tell people all the time, I said, the majority of athletes I've ever met have been nice, cool. And it's the handful that you remember that aren't like that. But, like, I think there's a way, like, I don't get the option like athletes do and Jason doesn't, to get the option like athletes do to be like, well, I don't feel like talking to y'all today. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the advantage that athletes do get, where it's like, hey, if you don't want to talk to me today, you don't have to. Or if you want to be abrupt with your answers to me because you feel a way about maybe something I said, or maybe you just don't feel like doing it, you could do that too. I can't do that though. And so that's where I think that the relationship between media member and athlete differs. Where sometimes I think in the era of the what does Draymond call it, where athletes be talking? New media. I think that's where they don't have the understanding of what this is all the time. I don't want to create that type of relationship with the people I cover where there's animosity. I think most athletes realize that at some point there's going to be a moment where they have to answer for things that they do or do not do within performance. And I think they expect some of the questions that they're asked sometimes. And so I don't think that it is necessarily something that is out of the ordinary to have a back and forth. Like, I come on here and make fun of Jason like everybody thinks he hates the Bears, and he does hate the Bears. Like, I joke, but like, I know just the way that Jason asks questions is one, very direct. He's a very direct person by nature. And he turns that shit up to like 100 when he gets in that room.
You've never seen me cover a good team. Nobody knows what it looks like.
No, I hope it's this year.
You'd have to go.
Why y'all years? So damn good, Caleb? Why did you throw five touchdowns today? You
answer the question.
You know? For all of Jason's career, people have been asking him that question. Like, I wonder what Jason would be like if he covered a good team. And he's like, Kanye, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah,
never like, covered a good team.
I love Jason, but I want him to like low key never cover Chicago teams no more. Because like, please give my teams a chance.
I was an intern covering the 05 White Sox, and that was fun. That was a fun atmosphere. That was so different than a lot of what I've continued to be around. The great teams I've covered have been the Heat had one great team when I was there. I was there for LeBron's last season when they went to the finals and lost to San Antonio. And the Florida Gators basketball team under Donovan was great during those years. They didn't win a championship. It was post Noah and them, but it was Brad Beal, Chandler Parsons. It was Elite Eight every year. That was great to be around that and cover that. I can't think of really, like, you get guys that are kind of hostile toward the media, especially in a football locker room. There's so many people. There's 53 guys on the roster.
You also hit people for a living, so
yeah, you got to be a little off probably to do that.
For sure.
There's guys that are, I always think of it as kind of nuisance problems. Like, Montez Sweat on the Bears doesn't like to talk to the media. He's not super friendly to the media. Like, okay. I would like it if their highest paid player, their, you know, perhaps best player we'll see at some point.
I'd be like, boy, you ain't Julius Peppers, boy. You better say something to me.
But okay. There's enough
else. Tone be wanting to get punched so bad. Like, Tone wants somebody to punch him so he could sue for money.
Yes, he does. Like, I swear. Yeah. Who was it that we thought was going to do it? Was it Chris Dunn?
Yes. Yo, Chris Dunn.
Of the Bulls?
Tone was like right here.
Yo, can you imagine if I got slumped by Chris Dunn?
I would have laughed. I'd be like, ah, that's hilarious. Why you do my man like that?
But to your point, Russ, about covering David Ross, the manager of the Cubs, one of my favorite relationships I've had in covering pro sports was covering Dwayne Wade, because Dwayne Wade's a great player. He's a Hall of Famer. He's number three shooting guard of all time. But there were things about his game that you could, especially I was there later in his career, there were things that you could challenge. And we had such a good understanding of each other. I feel like there are probably very few athletes or coaches I've ever covered that understood me as well as Dwayne Wade did, to where we could get in these kind of pseudo arguments during an interview, but it was really just trying to get to the bottom of something. It was really just trying to understand, like, why is it that you will not even try to become a 3-point shooter? Things like that.
Why are you the way you are?
Right. And I never felt like it ever turned hostile. I felt like it was kind of a productive argument where we got somewhere. And sometimes that's a style of conversation where it's very helpful to both sides, where you kind of get it from each other. That's one of my complaints about the season that I covered Jay Cutler in Miami. Was Jay Cutler had no interest in having any kind of relationship whatsoever with any of the people that he covered. And Jay Cutler was a disaster in Miami. I don't mind naming names of the people I didn't get along with. Jay Cutler is one of them. Nick Saban's another one.
I thought y'all was cool.
I don't know if you remember Trey Burton, the tight end.
Trey Burton.
Trey Burton.
You talk about a disaster. Trey Burton was horrible.
But Jay was problematic on the field, and then all the questions on Wednesdays and Sundays would be about that. And Jay took it all so personally. Everything was a personal attack. Well, it's because you're not even making any effort to get along with anyone, to like have conversations on the side with people, kind of get where they're coming from, do what Justin Fields would do, where if he got asked a question that he felt like was disrespectful, he would approach you about it. And Nick Saban, maybe I give him a pass. I was in my very first year of my career covering Nick Saban as coach of the Dolphins, and I was outmatched. This was not like it is now. Trey Burton is an interesting one because he and I didn't like it. He and I started
generational hate. Y'all have been hating for years.
It's weird. It's weird, and I don't
Jobby.
And I don't remember why. Because when I was covering University
probably
of Florida,
still on site.
When I was covering University of Florida, where he played college football, he was supposed to be the next Tebow when he got there. He was supposed to be a quarterback. He was going to be the next of that type of quarterback. Urban Meyer was still the coach there. And we had a really good interview where I did kind of a profile on him as he was starting to emerge as a true freshman. And somewhere along the way, I don't know, maybe it's kind of, I kind of felt like there was that phoniness, like you talk about, Russ.
The fake nice guy.
I don't know. One way or another, we both ended up not liking each other during that time at Florida. And to be fair, like, let me, before everyone gets on me about getting into it with a college kid, I think I was 27. I wasn't that you old were, at that time.
Yeah.
I wasn't picking on a college kid necessarily. Well, sure enough, it comes back around. And
he signs with Bears.
In 2019, I'm covering the Bears. And we never really had a conversation about it because it was never a relationship like that, but it was still there. And I maybe he remembers why. I don't. I don't remember exactly why things.
You didn't want, you weren't willing to squash it though.
I guess not. But I was, but I take my job so seriously. It matters so much to me how I treat people, regardless of how they treat me, that I defended Trey Burton in my writing. People were all over Trey Burton. That was his last season.
You should have been.
People were all over him, and he was.
Did that influence your writing then? The other way?
Maybe it could have.
It was like, I got to overdo it because I know this motherfucker know possible. I hate him and he hate me. And he going to read.
Possible. That's possible because you so badly don't want to get sucked into that because you know that's wrong. You know it's wrong to let a personal beef or whatever affect how you cover somebody. That's not right. Nobody other than you cares about that. The player or coach. The readership doesn't care about you and Trey Burton don't like each other. You and Trey Burton don't say hi at Portillo's, you know, something like that. So maybe it did sway me a little bit to force myself to go the other way and defend him a little bit.
I think I noticed that. I'm glad I had those experiences to learn all these things that we're talking about, because I think at the national level, you don't deal with that, right? Like you don't, because you're not seeing guys every day. Your relationships are built more behind the scenes now. And so like it's different, right? Where when you're in the room every day, you see the nasty side of seasons, right? You see the three, in your case, Jason, the four game losing streak. In my case, I was there for a 12 gamer that was the end of the Chicago Cubs as we once knew them, right? Like a losing streak that leads into a blow up of the team, like all that. You don't deal with those things at the national level. And I'm grateful that I didn't just go into the national job first, because that's a wild trajectory. But like, you get all the stops along the way to learn about being on a beat, right? To learn about building a relationship with people, to learn about how you navigate a million different personalities on one roster.
Absolutely.
Right? In both coaching staffs and the rosters themselves, front offices, people are different. People operate differently. People like learn how to treat other people differently based off like how, like, I think people treat me completely different than they treat other people, not necessarily because I've done anything wrong, but like maybe the way I come across is more welcoming to somebody else. That might happen. So I think at this point in time, and I think television adds another layer to that too, because people see you all the time.
Yeah. Then they start to feel like they know you.
Right.
Even though they don't.
Right, which is cool because that helps some of the process that you would, or some of what you gain in being on a beat every day, you can kind of cut the line of that, so to speak.
Yeah.
I think it's all really valuable. And I think you become a better reporter going through all those steps. Like, you're a better reporter, for better or worse, because hey, you and Trey Burton, y'all didn't rock with each other, but one, even in that, you still found a way to cover him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you didn't have to have that hey, if you're in the locker room and y'all just in there chilling, had a conversation with, like, that didn't have to be that, but like, you did your job professionally.
Yeah. I think there's some good in being in that situation where you have to be there every day. You have to cover this team. You're in a situation, or any national person's a national reporter's in a situation where you're covering the story of your league, whatever it is. You're covering the story of baseball, story of NFL. It's usually going to be positive. Not always, but it's mostly going to be positive stories. People are going to want to talk about it. You're not forced to. Hell or high water, you're covering the Cubs. You're covering the Marlins. You're covering the Orioles, whether it's the White Sox, whether it goes well. Or the White Sox, by the way, now advertising that Caleb Williams is going to throw out the first pitch, thinking that's going to get more than 12,000 people in the seats. But I think it's good to be forced into the situation of you have to find the right line, like we talked about a few minutes back, of being critical when criticism is warranted, but doing it respectfully, professionally, doing it in a way that you can live with and defend to other people. But also, I think it's good to be forced to cover people that are difficult personalities or may at first seem hostile toward you. Two of my favorite people that I've covered, that I've dealt with on a regular basis, both were kind of gave this vibe of very anti-media. One was Chris Anderson, Birdman. I just absolutely love Chris Birdman Anderson. If I saw him today, I probably would give him a hug. And the other guy is Ndamukong Suh. And, you know, you start to ask him a little bit about that and you kind of understand where it comes from. You understand, you talk to people that know him and you're like, well, that's not the guy he is like on a day-to-day basis with us. And you start to find out there's some reasons for things. Somebody's been burned, or someone didn't like how this quote was taken, or someone, you know, has dealt with this type of reporter before. And I mentioned Montez Sweat earlier. That may be something I'd learn over time with Montez Sweat. He's been on the Bears for half a season. Maybe we find out over time there's a reason why he's kind of anti-media, and maybe things change. That's another thing, Russ. One more thing.
No, you're good.
Most of these guys are in their 20s.
Yeah.
Most of these guys are in their 20s. Now, Birdman Anderson and Ndamukong Suh weren't at the time I covered them, but Montez Sweat is like 26. A lot of these guys are in their 20s. They're still changing. They're still growing. You're not the same person at 25 as you are at 29.
1,000%. Can you explain getting burned for people? Because I don't know if people outside of our industry understands what that means.
Yeah, it could mean a lot of things, but you might feel like somebody has an agenda against you. A reporter has an agenda against you, or an agenda in favor of, you know, if it's two quarterbacks competing for a spot, or if it's kind of you against management, as it sometimes is, they're clearly in the pocket of management. A lot of times it's though a conversation that the player, the subject, doesn't think is going to be public, made public, and then it is. Either directly or indirectly, as a source said, or something like that, when that was not the understanding they had of that conversation. So that's another thing that I'm big on, is both sides need to clearly know what's going on. This can't be, I think it's off the record, but I don't know if you know it's off the record. Like, we're going to be very, very clear with, this is background material just so I understand something, or this is something I'm going to quote to a source or something like that. Can also be the quotes taken out of context. I really believe that it's very, very rare that somebody is actually misquoted. I don't think that happens.
No, very people often. Like to throw that out. Yeah.
That word gets misused probably by players and coaches. Often what they mean is that their quote was taken out of context. That there was not, that you took one or two sentences of what they actually said, but they feel that the four sentences they said before that really painted a full picture along with those two sentences that you quoted. And part of that can happen by accident, or that can happen intentionally. Like, you only get so much space when you're writing. You can't just put, and shouldn't,
just put
five paragraphs of a quote from somebody.
Right.
You need to pick what is the important, and that's a tough decision that you have to make. Mm-hmm. But it would be a tough decision maybe for some people, but it shouldn't be if this is your job. You have to say, can I boil this down to three sentences max without it losing the context or losing the intention of what the person meant? So those are the ways I think of it. I don't know. Am I missing one? Can you think of another thing
that guys
mean when they say, oh, I've been burned by the media before?
I think in my experience in baseball, like getting burned is something getting out that, yeah, they thought was off the record. I also think that many people in that are covered don't know the difference between off the record and on background. I actually think more people would go on background if they knew what on background meant, right? Like if they knew, and for everybody out there, they're just in the weeds, but on background means
it's a key distinction.
I don't use your name in whatever I'm quoting. It would say anonymous source, source said, industry source, leak source, all the things that you see out there. So sometimes if I'm talking to somebody and I'm like, yo, this is going to be on background. Without attribution. I think that's a big one all the time too. Just like without attribution, because I think people understand that. That means, oh, this won't be attributed to me. But I think sometimes people think off the record means on background is like, yo, yeah, you can use this as long as you don't put my name in it, you know? So that's where I think people, that happens sometimes too. Sometimes I think getting burned is like, if they think people like dunk on them.
Mm-hmm. Which is more than ever now with Twitter.
Yeah. Like people call that like, oh, I got burned by that guy because I thought he understood blah, blah, blah. And then he like wrote that I was shitty, you know, stuff like that.
So, didn't Carlos give like a story about that? About
yeah. Yes. So with Braves, the backup catcher for the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Perez, he burned Eddie Perez. He 100% burned Eddie Perez.
As a young reporter, unintentionally.
Yes.
He burned Eddie Perez. And it was exactly what we're talking about. Thank you for bringing that up, Tom. It's exactly what Russ is talking about of there, both sides not being on the same page of whether this is going to be for public consumption.
Yeah.
Carlos thought it was, and I will swear by Carlos Frias' integrity. Carlos thought it was. Eddie Perez thought it wasn't. And it ended up in print and caused an issue for the Braves.
I think sometimes, too, you have to have the discernment as a reporter of, you know, sometimes people are just talking to you. And then if I were in an athlete's corner, I would say, you can't just be talking to everybody. Right? Like there's things that I've heard in conversations that I know weren't meant for public consumption that you obviously don't report on.
It's a gray area.
You know what I mean?
What's the wildest?
No,
oh, I got my favorite. No, I can tell them. I can tell them one.
Here's the funny thing.
I can tell them one because we reported it last year.
The funny thing is like, I just imagine like a player doing a press conference. He's trying to figure out, hey man, what's going on? Hey, you know, just things happen in life and, you know, just things and the session ends. And then he's like, all right, off the record, boy, I was getting blasted all last night. That's why I didn't play well. And it's just extremely funny to me that the complete opposite of what was presented happens. And they're just open to talk about it off the record.
My favorite example of this, and it's minor, it's just kind of minutia, but it's funny, is Chase Claypool, when he was on the Bears, there was always some problem. There was always Chase doesn't know the plays, or Chase is difficult, or Chase is injured. And during training camp last season, we're out there watching training camp from the sideline, and he just will not shut up at, I think it was Tyreek Stevenson, the cornerback. He's just constantly, and this was an annoyance of the Bears last fall, is all their defensive, you know, Jalen Johnson, Eddie Jackson. Like, why is this guy talking? Like, what have you done that you get to talk? Like, what are you doing running your mouth all the time? And he's running his mouth at Tyreek Stevenson. And then he goes in a one-on-one against Stevenson and gets past him and then drops the ball. He was wide open, drops the ball, pulls up lame. And on his way, kind of, limping back, and eventually to the sideline, he goes right past us. And in front of all the reporters, he says to Tyreek Stevenson, I made you look, he said, let me get the quote exactly right. I pulled my hamstring, making you look like a like, well, we know what that injury is.
Bro. Bro. That's hilarious.
Let's start the show.
Before we start,
40 the show, minutes in.
Can I say this? I think this has been fantastic.
I got more. We can do more. I feel like we should start the show, but I got all.
Yeah, the listen, as people long know as what you want to
go
is.
On this. Let's no, do it.
I've heard. Oh man, Tom. No, I can't say it. The dude doesn't.
Well, then, man,
in the it's baseball, wild.
Like, elevator music. Elevator music.
The things you've heard, man.
I've heard of. I'm like, yo, my man is going crazy out here
about that life.
But elevator music over that. But Tone, you hear some wild things.
And you hear a lot of commentary about from players about teammates' romantic lives. Yes.
And listen, man, like to me,
but that's interesting because it's like that stuff absolutely affects, right? Can affect
1,000%
performance,
1,000%,
and it's like you can't. Talk about it. You can't explain.
Never be able to talk about
right, but you know that, it's affecting their performance on field. So even if you can be like, oh well, this is what they're doing X and O wise, or I can explain. Like, you know, that's not the real reason that this athlete isn't performing in the ways that they should. But I think that might just go to or telling the audience to hey, there are people just like you guys. With real life things that they either put themselves in or that just life just happens that affects how they do their job, just like everybody else.
Like there was a time, like a recently, I found out that a player who was not performing with one organization ended up getting traded, playing very well now. Yeah. And it's like, hey, you figure out, oh, you know, he's doing this, doing that, doing this, doing that. And then you hear like, oh, yeah, he was also like an alcoholic.
There's always stuff drinking. Like that. There was always
just like
this guy needed to get away from this city or this family situation or this romantic entanglement. There's always stuff like that.
And you don't realize all the time.
Never.
And sometimes you get in a situation where it's like, I don't even. What should I report here? Because, like, I don't want to feel like I'm taking advantage of somebody's problem.
Right.
Right. Like, and that was told to me, the alcohol part, you get told in confidence a lot of times, like, yo, this is what this dude was dealing with. You know, they weren't, you know, when they got on the plane, you knew that alcohol was going to be drunk. Right. Like, stuff like that. So it's a fine line of. The things you know versus the things that come out. I think most reporters would tell you that. Like, we report 2% of the things we know, to be honest. Jason, will you agree with that?
It'd be a lot. It is, you know, there are still some boundaries, unlike covering celebrity and things like that.
Yeah, bro.
There are still some boundaries in sports reporting.
Yeah, like, I had found something out one time, and I'm talking to a guy's agent. And I'm like, Doug, I mean, I'm not TMZ. So as long as, if you're not going to jail, right? Like, as long as you don't end up in the news for going to jail, then we got to have a conversation about your client. But like, I'm not Harvey, what's Harvey last name? Who does TMZ?
Levin?
Harvey Levin. I'm not Harvey. Like, I don't care about what my man's or person is doing out in the streets. Just don't get arrested, because then we have to have a conversation.
Right. Then it has to be in the
then we got to have the tough conversation. But yeah, like I think a lot of times I'm a big believer in, hey man, grown folks business. But when you get the whoop whoop, no longer grown folks business.
Right.
Okay, Jason.
I agree with you. Welcome to Sports Adjacent. I'm Jason Leisure with my co-host, Russ Dorsey. Hopefully you've figured that out by now, because it's about the longest cold open in show history.
It was great.
I might have split this up. I don't know.
The littest. You're going to put a segment break in the cold open? We've never had
that. This is going to be in the beginning. And then we're going to.
I haven't done it in a way that he could do that. With the littest producer in the game, Tony Gill is here. Let me. What did we start talking about? Was it Justin Fields?
Yeah.
Here, let me give you something you can go with, Tony. Yeah. So that's how the Justin Fields thing was. Anyway, let's start the show. Can you use that?
I'll probably just let it rock.
Just let it rock. I'm about to say, let it rock. Just let it go. Let it rock.
Oh. Checked Out Tony Gill is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles. You can go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Take advantage of all their sales they got going on in the month of May and get a little extra when you use our link. They'll put a little extra discount in your cart at checkout if you use sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Got to get the sheet set. Got to have it for summertime. You're already late on this because it's already warm everywhere. Get this now. Get on there. Go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Get the extra discount. Get yourself the sheet set. You will thank us later. I guarantee that.
Can I say real quick, you talked about it being warm everywhere. We're in 3-shower-a-day season.
I'm in Pittsburgh and it's 85.
That's warm. At night.
It's pretty warm at night. Yeah, I'm sweating, man.
Like we had one of those days, you've been out of town, but here in Chicago yesterday, Jay, it was like, it's close to 90. It was 88 degrees the first pitch at the Cubs game when I was there. And during the day, and I had to do like TV and dog, you're sitting out there and they have a shade, but man, sometimes that shade, and we had the day where there's no breeze and it's warm. That's the tough one. That's a tough one. But Tone, to your point, because you made a face when I said it's 3-shower-a-day season, you got to get that one post-workout shower, maybe one if you're a morning shower person, right, after you off the wake up. And then you'd be out and about doing your day, especially on a day like we had yesterday where it's a little humid too. Nah, I gotta come back home and get the nice shower so I feel like I'm going to sleep clean.
That's still like, for me, it's like two. Like three, I think is a little bit over.
Usually I have three. A third because I have the workout in there.
Yeah, you can end up at three too. If you're exercising.
Yeah.
Or swimming or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, but even with that, it's like you shower. Like, let's start the nighttime. You shower at night, mm-hmm. You go to sleep. You wake up, like, why do you need the shower then?
See, I'm the opposite tone. I don't understand how somebody cannot start their day by showering.
Well, I mean, if you shower the night before.
I get the logic of showering at night because it's like you're cleaning yourself of everything you've encountered that day.
Before you get into your clean bed.
But I don't get only doing that. I can understand showering in the morning and at night, but not.
I don't understand in the morning.
Not showering in the morning doesn't compute to me. Like, I've got to be clean and fresh leaving the house.
Jay, I'm with you from the standpoint of usually I work out in the morning too. So those two showers usually blend into one.
Yeah, I don't need a shower in the morning.
Like my first shower day. I don't need one before the one I go after for a run.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm with you.
But I get Tone's point too of like, man, I'm not trying to have funk in the bed. That's a very sacred space to me, the bed. Like, I think,
oh yeah,
when I'm in this room, we here for two reasons.
Oh boy,
mm-hmm. One I can't talk about because my mom won't listen.
Oh, the I other can. One is that is all how you phrase it.
The other one is
that's sleep. Worship time. You know what,
what are you about to say, Tom? Knocking boots.
He's talking about work. It's worship time.
That's worship
I'm
time.
I'm not gonna play in God's face like me. That. I'm not gonna play in God's face like.
Did a whole episode about not playing in God's face,
right? But I was gonna say because like I don't have a TV in my bedroom for the same reason. Huh. I don't eat in my bed, like so. I want to feel clean and relaxed and go to sleep. That's it.
Do you eat on the? Do you sit on the bed and eat at a hotel ever or no? I'll do that.
No,
I'll do that.
I think that's man, nasty, no snack, dog. I think that's little, nasty.
Yeah. It's a little.
A couple ice cream.
That's nasty, bro. No,
I hear you.
This bed, like, I like for people who bring let their dogs be in their bed too. It's the same thing.
No. See, but that, a hotel bed's different. But you're right though.
You know what I mean? Like that.
I don't. The dog does not go in my bed.
Into
the,
my bed space.
No. The dog does not go in my any. The dog does not go on my bed. I never eat in the bed. I never put my backpack down on the bed or anything like that.
Yes, bro. Oh, man. Y'all know how I feel about like wearing outside clothes in my bed.
I'll have a drink in bed.
I've been there.
Yeah. I'll have a glass of whiskey.
I think that's different, though. I think beverage is different than food.
Yeah. There's no crumbs from a drink.
Yeah, there's no crumbs. I can put this on the nightstand.
Yes. Yes.
But if you spill it, we have consensus. You got to change the whole thing.
I'm an adult.
Who cares, man? You can wash it.
See, that's my thing, Tone. You said I can wipe off some crumbs. Where? You just go put more dirt crumb on the floor?
Put it right to the floor for the mice.
No, grab a napkin and then scoop it up. Like, instead of like, if you spill something on the bed, it's like peeing in the bed. You got to change the whole bed.
I think that might keep me from whatever.
Peeing in the bed? What are you talking about?
Whatever relationship I get into eventually, a big thing for me is going to be, do you eat in a bed? If you say, yeah, I don't think we can rock, shorty. I'm sorry.
Everybody can change.
A lot of people love snacking.
Snack your ass outside.
Yeah. I don't want to have crumbs in my head, man.
Imagine I'm asleep and I roll over here.
I don't think that's a hill you'll die on.
Yes, it is. Tone, you don't understand. You don't understand how
it'll be part of the negotiation.
No,
Russ will get a concession on that, and then Russ will have to concede something in return.
Y'all don't understand how I feel about cleanliness, bro.
Well, what if they'd be like, all right, I won't eat in the bed if I can wear outside clothes in the bed, and that's a negotiation.
No, Tone, that's worse.
I don't get why someone would need to do that. When would you ever get into your bed fully clothed?
Sleeping on the ale.
Raymond did it a bunch.
You got to stop watching that, man.
Bro, imagine.
You got to stop watching Everyone Loves Raymond. What's wrong with you?
Sitting on the L all day and getting them into my bed, Tone. My bed. You're going to disrespect my fresh sheets and giggle sheets with the L?
What? There is
let me bring my chips in there.
There are a few feelings worse than you get in your bed and you feel like on your bare leg, you feel like some crumbs or some grit in the bed.
Oh.
What is that? How did it get there?
But you also, again, you guys said, oh, I'm an adult. I'm not going to spill. Like, you're not, like, in getting in bed with Cookie Monster, right? Like,
Tone.
That's not true. No.
I did not say I won't spill. Russ said that.
I said that.
I'm going to spill sometimes. I generally don't. But I'm not going to be perfect. And so that's why I don't eat in my bed.
Tone.
If I'm eating some Doritos in my bed, I'm gonna probably make some crumbs.
Crumbly.
I'm not perfect, so I don't do that. I eat the food where crumbs would be fine, like at a table, and then I can clean them up.
I put chips on the plate so that I don't get crumbs everywhere when I'm sitting on my couch. You're like, that's how. That's who you're talking
furniture
to.
Furniture too.
That's who you're talking to.
You're gonna find the perfect person for you, Russ, and she's gonna love to snack. Before bed, in the bed, and then you're going to have to make it.
Because you think I'm anti-snack, and I'm like, baby, come on, let's go snack on the couch while we're watching this movie. I can get down with that. Get all the ice cream, all the pints, all the chips.
Pints. this is what we've narrowed down, I think, is he's going to marry the lady version of me, not the lady version of Tony.
Yes.
100%. There it is. Yes.
Because Lady J was going to have respect for my house. Lady Tone is going to get my bed off the L. And then we're going to have a word.
Yeah. Lady version of me will shower in the morning.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for, Russ.
Lady
put that,
Tone.
Maybe put
night.
That in your Tinder profile, like what you're looking for, you know? The
Lady J.
Not eat
I'm lady, looking for my Lady J.
The lady version of Jason Leisure.
Or his Raya. Riot profile.
I'm looking Lady for J. my Lady J is hilarious.
Oh man, BetMGM sponsors our show if they still want to. I don't know. Sports Jason's brought to you by BetMGM. You can go to betmgm.com or download the BetMGM app. Use our promo code adjacent1000 and your first bet with BetMGM gets paid back in free future betting credits up to $1,500 if you don't win. That's promo code adjacent1000. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Tone, do you need me to pause so you can take a break here?
I was going to say, this is, we've never had a show that was going to start in.
We have to? Okay.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
I have more small talk to get to. We don't have to spend a lot of time on this. But have you noticed that I'm wearing these cheap corded headphones and not my AirPods?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks in a row. I left my AirPods at Alice Hall.
Damn,
and
somebody stole them, boys.
No. Somebody grabbed them, thankfully. Oh. Patrick Finley grabbed them for me. But
shout out to Pat.
Like, you could live in the same general area. You could live in the greater Chicago area, and so could another person, and you could be an hour apart. So it's like, it hasn't gotten to the point where I want them back badly enough that I'm willing to drive 2 hours round trip to go get them from his house, as opposed to just waiting till the next time I see him. But I did not realize how reliant I was on those things until they're gone. And I have the noise canceling, and that's the hardest part, because I came up in all of these situations where, you know, you're covering the NFL, you're covering college football, you're writing in NBA arenas. And this is before I had noise canceling headphones. You got to be able to focus. You got to be able to sit in a Starbucks and focus, sit on an airplane and focus no matter what's going on around you. And I've always been good at that. I feel like that's atrophied now because I had the noise canceling headphones. I didn't have to have that skill anymore, and it atrophied on me. And the last 2 weeks of not having them, I have just been distracted by the most inane conversations around me, and I miss.
Hey, yo, pass me that glizzy over there.
You're like, what?
That being the outside conversation. I
feel you on the headphones though. Like,
yeah,
my whole job is in headphones. Sound. So, like, I need headphones just to, like, because I have to listen to so much stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I need to listen while I'm on a toilet. I need to listen while I'm on a walk. I need to listen while I'm driving. Like, I need to listen while I'm watching TV sometimes. Like, my whole life is about listening to stuff. So, if I don't have an AirPod, my productivity levels are dramatically decrease because of the amount of listening that I have to do.
I don't think you should be walking around with them on noise canceling. Like, I think you should be aware of what's going on around you if you're on the sidewalk, if you're about to cross the street.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you're driving a car. But it's a pretty great superpower to be able to just turn everybody off with the click of an AirPod. Just turn everything around you off.
I will say this.
I used to have that superpower, whatever that would be. Silence, man. Whatever it would be. I used to have that. I used to be able to do it. And now I've found out these last 2 weeks, I don't have it anymore. I've been overly reliant on these AirPods, Tone.
It does help, though, when I'm on the train and I'm in noise cancel. Like, my perception of things have definitely increased. Like, I'm peeping everybody and I'm peeping everything. Because, you know, you're in a vulnerable space if you can't hear, right? So that means all your other senses need to be heightened and aware. So, like, no, smell, no, taste. No.
You're hearing. It's like I've become a superhuman. You're crazy. What is smell doing? What is smell doing for you in that situation?
What if somebody is about that too? Yep.
Yep. Is that a detective show that we? Did you just come up with a new police drama for CBS where it's a detective who solves crimes by smell? I don't think we've done that.
Can't hear.
Mm-hmm. Can't hear or see.
Yep.
Has but no sense of touch.
Like, where I live,
it's all by smell.
Where I live, where it's not particularly 1,000% safe. Like, no place is 1,000% safe, but you get what I'm saying. Man, you got to be able to look around. You got to peep. You got to see. Oh, man, he moving weird.
No, I hear you, but I feel like being able to hear would only help in that situation.
It would, but I don't always don't have that luxury because I got to listen. So that means my eyesight got to be okay. On point. I got to see how people watching.
Right.
Oh man, my man's got his hands in his pockets. So, you know, I mean, you just
I'm with Tone on the watching though.
Well, my, yeah, but watching and hearing,
gotta watch. Yeah, the hearing.
Do you think you see better when you have noise canceling headphones in, Russ? Because yeah. that's the absurd that's point, the point he's trying to make. Yeah, that's what he's trying to say.
Here's how I'm gonna make my point.
He has eagle eyes when he can't hear.
Here's how I'm gonna make my
tone. Point. Tone, and try plugging your nose and see if that amps up the vision even more.
No. Here's how I'm gonna make my point, and everybody that's listening is going to do a collective. He's right. You ready? Ready? When you're trying to find a park or when you're parking, do you not turn down your music?
That's for focusing, Tom.
That helps.
That's for focusing.
That helps you hear. That's improving yeah, right. One of your senses.
Never mind.
You're making my point for me.
Yeah, you're right. I forget I said that.
He said collective, you're right. Collective boos from everybody there.
He thought he was going to kill that.
Yeah, good point.
Said, no. Right. Yeah, hold on. All right, just get this. Wrong.
Everyone probably did agree with you because you made the opposite point to what you intended.
Funny part, people got hype listening to that. Ooh, what Tone going to say?
What kind of crazy thing is he going to say?
You fumbled at the goal line. You
had an excellent broadcaster. I had everybody ever. Locked in. I know how to bring them in. I mean, just you may not be fulfilled, but I got you locked in. Wasn't that fun? That was a fun roller coaster ride, wasn't it? Yeah.
It's fun not knowing stuff because then everything's much more exciting. I think you lured yourself in on that too.
I did. I thought
you were right there with the audience, like, oh man, watch what I'm about to say. Watch this mic drop.
Yeah, I'm holding my mic now. I was definitely about to drop it. And then I thought about it after it had came out of my mouth. Hey, yo, Paul.
I had an epiphany last week that I don't need to ever touch another animal the rest of my life.
Yeah, join the club.
Any animal of any kind, I'm good. We went to a nature museum in the city, my wife and daughters and I. And they had all these interesting snakes and reptiles and stuff and rodent type things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you guys, I don't know if you can like hear my facial expressions while I'm telling this as the audience, but I'm not into this. I like animals. I'm fascinated by animals. I don't ever need to touch another one ever. They brought around some kind of lizard and the people that work at these places are way over the top enthusiastic about all of it. They're like, hey, oh, feel its back. Feel how soft it is. And they're bringing it around to everyone. They get it to me and I'm just, I'm good. It's okay.
Yeah. I believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. I trust you. I bet it's
really that's me. I believe you.
Yeah. My kids are handling some kind of exotic snake. They're like, dad, here, let it crawl on your arm. I'm like, I'm all right. No. I'm fine. I similarly have never, and don't think I will ever again ever see a dog or cat that I'm like, I got to pet that. Hold on. Let me stop you and let me touch your animal. I'm good.
I'm 100% with you. I think, and we've talked about this on the show before, my collective care for animals isn't as high as other people. I also think.
Well, that's not true. No, that's not true. You care about let me stop you from walking into a problem. You care about the well-being of animals.
1,000%.
You are not in love with animals, need to bring them into your house.
Yeah.
You are probably not ever going to own a pet.
No, ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be some way to partner too. It's like, hey, mama, yeah, I love you. I love these babies, but we're not bringing nothing that crawls in here. I'm sorry.
Wait. So if you had a pet, no. If you had a kid, yeah.
I don't think that's what he was saying.
I don't think those two things correlate, brother. I don't think puppy equals kid. Like,
right. That too. Yeah, that too.
Hey, Tone's one of the funniest people.
Russ, you would first sign up to be a stepdad before you would sign up to be co-owner of an animal.
I might say yes to that for sure, though. I might, to Tone's point.
Wow.
It's so really, much more work. It's so much more responsibility.
I love people more than animals. Like,
I
like
guess. Okay.
Should.
Bold take by you.
Oh, wait. How old is the kid?
7.
Oh, we're here now.
7-year-old kid versus 7-year-old dog.
Well, the dog's ghost out of here anyway at that point. What is mom's relationship with biological dad?
They in court to this day.
To this day. Damn, don't. I mean, this one, here's the thing.
This is his wheelhouse, is these would you rather scenarios.
I love these.
This is what he's best at.
People do be knowing me for the would you rather, because I love doing that to people. If what you're saying is the relationship between mom and biological dad is rocky. Do I like the kid though?
Yeah.
You can take him or leave him.
No, come on. All right. You know, I'm sorry. I'll stay out of it. It's Tone's game. It's Tone's game. You could take him or leave him. What a horrible way to describe any kid at all.
I wanted to answer, but I'm like
you're not, so
you're
mean.
You're not setting your friend up for success.
You're so mean.
I don't like that. I'm going to go with Jason's version of I do like the kid. If I like the kid a lot and I love his mom, we're probably going to make it work. I'm just going to have to be no nonsense with biological dad.
He calls semi-frequently. Asking is you with that N-word Russ?
Yo, that is wild. Hey, because here's my thing, Tone. The more you do this, the more mad I'm gonna get, and then I'm about to put my hands on. Like, because what you don't want to
put hands on the imaginary.
You don't want to. You don't want to put your hands on the imaginary stepdad, right? Or I'm the stepdad. You don't want to put your hands on the imaginary biological dad. And so it's just like. Ah, but I know, I'm laughing, but I know like that exists. And it's a conversation you gotta, I think for me, my first course of action would be, look, I know you're the dad of this kid. I love your ex person and I really care about your child and we're going to be together and I'm going to be in your child's life. But I want to be a positive role model in your child's life. You're still here. You're still a father, but I'm going to be here a lot too. And I just want to be a positive person in your child's life. Huh. And then go Russell after Wilson that. Dorsey. Listen, for all the stuff you say about Russell, people say about Russell Wilson, I think he got that part right.
Yeah.
Tone, this says everything about him though, that he'd be willing to go to these lengths.
To not get a dog.
To avoid marrying into a dog situation. He's willing to like have a powwow, have a sit down
with somebody's
the child's father who hates him before he's willing to go, pick up some kibble at Petco.
That's funny.
I'm with you.
I can't believe that's wild that you described a kid as take him or leave him.
Wait, that one would crazy.
Some of them.
No. See, this is revealing, bro. Russ, this is revealing. Because you know he 100% would choose having a dog over having a kid in that scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Tony, you low-key hate kids.
Yeah, well, people put that on me.
Tell me the kids. Tell me, not love, but like. Tell me the kids you like besides your own flesh and blood.
And
like your own family. Your own family, including Ja. And I assume my daughters. Like, what other children in the world do you like? Because I don't think there's any.
I like Muffin from Bluey.
Okay, that's a cartoon.
It's cartoon. I say a cartoon.
Exactly.
But a kid.
No, he low key hates kids.
I don't think it's low key at this point.
I respect kids.
Tone told a kid to shut the fuck up at the steakhouse because he wanted to eat.
I did not say that.
Yeah. He was mad that someone brought their kid to a restaurant.
Said, hey,
he didn't
want ass down.
He doesn't want anyone to give a foul ball to a kid because what if it's a bad kid?
Correct.
Like, I don't think you like, I'm very confident you don't like kids. You like your own. You like your family.
No.
I you might not even like my kids now. I don't know.
No, I love your kids.
Okay.
But they're you hilarious. Went to the fictional kid first.
But yeah, you know. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I respect kids. You know, do your kid thing. You understand me?
do your kid thing.
It's just, I don't know how people be raising their kids these days. I trust, I like kids well. Who I know parents I respect and enjoy.
To Tomo's point, I do think parents is fucking up these days, because I be seeing some badass kids out here, man. Like, I know it's like bad for the non-kid guy to say people ain't parenting their kids right. I think I could see a badass kid.
Even my kids, my kids are good kids, I think, and they say sure. stuff, but they yeah. say stuff, yeah. they say stuff that would have got me slapped. And I can tell you for a fact, like me and my brothers, we didn't really get slapped. Because we knew not to say certain things.
Well, I was going to say you...
We knew better than to walk into a good slap.
You don't have a slapping household now.
Right.
Right. Like, and I think it's probably different with daughters, too.
I tell them, though. I tell them. When they say it, I said, that would have got me slapped, just so you know. And I would not have got slapped.
Unless Ashley's whooping ass over there.
Because I would have known not to say it.
Maybe it is a slapping house.
No, it is not. It is decidedly not. No.
But, like, I see some kids out. It's always the airport, because I'm at the airport multiple times a week.
That is high degree of difficulty.
Getting away with murder in airports.
Okay. And yeah, you don't want that. I'm with you. You don't. I will say the situation you're always trying to avoid as a parent, and Tone, you might be there now with a 6-month-old, but you, even if you're not, you will be very soon. You never want to be in these waiting situations. If you are waiting with nothing to do, you have to work. Then you are working hard parenting wise. And the airport is prime waiting around with nothing to do for a long time.
I saw two high degree of difficulty below the floors at the airport this week. Like, I'm walking with my bag and I see a mom, and moms are working hard out there these days. A mom pushing a stroller and then two other crumb crushers on her sides that aren't much older than the baby that's in the stroller. Mm-hmm. And so mom, she didn't waste time. She's popping them out. And by herself, because dad wasn't there, and one of the kids that was on the side just said, you know what? I've had enough of this shit today. I'm going to lay down right here in the middle of O'Hare. And I felt bad because, like, you could tell mom, she wasn't for the games at that point. But, like, I don't know what you do as a parent in that situation either. Like, you got three kids here under the age of 5, and one has decided, I'm going to show my ass into the C terminal.
See, I think maybe people misinterpret, like, what I think what we deem as bad, Russ. Like, we're not talking about, like, crying or not being able to, like, get out of the
boredom. I consider throwing yourself on the floor in the middle of any place bad. Because
you should not be on the floor. You should not be on the floor in public. Yes.
Yeah, but even that, right? It's like, you know, that kid had a long day. That kid's probably hungry, right? Like, I can make excuses for that. It's the disrespectful, I think, situations where they're being disrespectful to others' properties, right? Like, intentionally, like, stuff like that, you know? Like, if this is like, hey, man, is that yours? No. So why are you touching it? All right, leave it alone, you know?
I hear kids cussing and saying outlandish things. Look.
Or what? I tell you what they're not going to do?
I think cussing is great. Once you get to a certain age, like, I be looking at these kids like, you know how old I was before I got to say that word? Yeah, like, what are we talking about?
You haven't earned that.
Yeah. No.
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question, Jason. Like, when will they be allowed to curse?
Not while they live under my roof. That's not going to be okay. I don't curse. I don't generally curse. And very rarely do I curse, except in a situation where I'm quoting somebody.
I like that rule.
I want my kids to be smart enough that they can come up with other words. When you heard Russ talking about how hard moms work, that's true. I'm not pandering. That's true. Tone, have you experienced this phenomenon where, and I've had this for years with my kids, if you as a dad do anything at all, people will give you a standing ovation, even though moms are doing it all the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, you take your kid to the grocery store, like, and I bet 5 people are like, oh, man, what a good dad. Look at this guy.
Like, the bar for being a good dad is so low. So low. that people don't understand. Like,
you remember all the stuff. Names?
Oh, right. Right. If you don't lose them,
right.
A plus.
Like, it's weird. And I always make sure, and that's why moms deserve all the stuff on Mother's Day, on birthdays, throughout the year, get the break that they need to kind of regroup, because they deal with all the stuff all the time. And like, even like now, right? Where like Anaya, she's still like waking up in the middle of the night. Like, she gets up most of the time. Like, most of the time she gets up. Like, I'd be out. And she gets up like without a complaint, goes take care of it. Like, nobody sees that. Like, or everybody is expecting of the mom to do that, when there's not a lot. There's a lot of mothers that wouldn't, or put themselves first in those situations. So, like, man, good moms and great moms, man, they deserve a lot of respect. They deserve all the gifts and honors that you can give them, because, man, again, the bar for being a good dad is if you're around and they're smiling while you're there, everybody's like, oh, that's what a great dad. What a great dad.
Almost anything that's going to be doing. Yes. Russ, I remember my kids, I think, were 4 and 1 or something like that. And I took them with me. We lived in Miami at the time, and I took them with me flying up to Chicago for a work assignment. And I was going to be up there for the week, so I took them with. And at every turn going through the airport with these two kids, somebody was telling me what a great dad I am.
Oh, can we? Oh, do you need help? Like, you are such a great dad. Like, I'm getting on a plane, and the flight attendants are telling me that there's no less than 10 moms on this flight doing the same thing.
MFing you.
Right. 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 Yeah.
Russ, let's do the news.
All right.
Are you a Happy Gilmore fan? I think that movie came out around when you were born, but it's in syndication. It's on TV. Like,
I'm not the biggest Adam Sandler guy either.
I'm not either. I like what he does. Good for him. I'm happy for him. I'm not hating on him.
I hear he's a great dude. Cool. But like, his movies is not for me.
He dresses how he wants to dress.
There's a couple.
He appears to have a blank check from Netflix. He's reportedly a good basketball player.
No, he be hooping. I've heard.
Even though he's like almost 60. What I wanted to get to is there's going to be a Happy Gilmore sequel, Netflix announced. But in the process of that.
Without Carl Weathers?
Well, he's dead.
Carl Weathers, still.
They're probably going to try to honor him in some way, though.
They should.
They said they were going to. Adam Sandler is now almost 60, and he's going to come back as Happy Gilmore. And Christopher McDonald, who played Shooter McGavin, he's 70 almost, is going to come back. And Adam Sandler did say they're going to honor Carl Weathers. And I think there's a couple other people that have passed away that were in the first one. By the way, Russ, Happy Gilmore in 1996 was a box office hit, bringing in $39 million. That's crazy.
Times have changed, man. But you make $39 million today. Somebody.
Right.
Probably only
somebody messed up.
You're not getting a second movie.
No. You probably only needed like $1 million.
I do think it's cool that Adam Sandler gets to do what he wants. He gets to make movies with his friends. It's always the same people in his movies. He's turning out 3 movies a year for Netflix, it seems like. But it did get me thinking, what is the last Adam Sandler movie I actually watched? So I went through and looked through his filmography, and it was Funny People in 2009 was the last Adam Sandler movie I've seen. He's made 32 movies since then, or he's appeared in 32 movies.
How many kids did he have?
I don't know.
A lot? Because this would, like, when people could just work that much, it's just like, you must got the like Eddie Murphy for a long time, where you're like, why Eddie making these shitty ass right. movies? And it's like, Eddie was a wild
Adam Sandler boy. Must have got the LeBron deal. Like the LeBron Nike deal. He must have got the lifetime blank check from Netflix. Netflix, back when Netflix was throwing Dave Chappelle $20 million for every special, including ones he'd already recorded. they must have just said, Adam Sandler, like, for life, you just make whatever you want and we'll pay you.
Every 3 years, make us some and we'll give you money.
No, three a year. You have the ratio wrong, sir. It's three a year.
Hey, that's a 360 deal. They got him in hell.
Yeah.
Jeez.
You make as many as you want. We'll just pay you for each one.
Ugh.
Did you know it's that weed is illegal in Wisconsin?
Illegal?
It's got to be tricky. I'm not a pot smoker of any kind. Do people call it pot?
No, that was old.
That's old? Okay. I'm
pot and reefer. I know how old you are when you say those things.
The loud and quiet.
The chronic?
The chronic is old too now.
People who sticky say the chronic.
See, I respect that one because it reminds me of Rick James. The sticky is not an icky. Like, I love that.
But it's got to be hard to keep track, though. Like, where it's legal in a bunch of states, but it's illegal in a bunch of states.
If you say the ganja, I know you old as hell. Yeah, you say loud, you probably, like, in your 30s.
Tone, find me all the synonyms for weed and just start throwing them out. Just pepper them in while we go. It's illegal in Wisconsin, and it seems like someone has found a creative way to protest that. This is a story from the Associated Press. Dozens of marijuana plants sprouted in a tulip garden at the Wisconsin State Capitol building in Madison, Wisconsin.
Grass, hash, roach, hemp, hashish, dope.
Well, hemp is not weed.
Dope is great. No, dope is any drug to black people.
Okay.
It's like heroin is every drug to black people, too.
Maui Wowie. Doobie.
Maui Wowie sounds like it's a particular Doobie strain of it.
If you're not talking about Michael McDonald.
What was the last one, Tone?
Acapulco Gold.
Well, those sound like different, varieties of weed to me.
Ganja.
Okay. So anyway, Russ, somebody planted a bunch of weed in a tulip garden at the Capitol building in Wisconsin. State officials had to remove it on Friday, and they don't know how it got there. But University of Wisconsin botanist Shelby Ellison told the AP that there were far too many of these plants for it to have been an accident.
Mm.
Tone, you mentioned Bluey earlier, and man, I've got a story for you out of Las Vegas.
Turn me up.
A restaurant in Las Vegas drew huge crowds after advertising that they were having Bluey Day. They were having a Bluey Day event. Bluey was going to be there. It was going to be all Bluey themed. They said they didn't think a lot of people were going to show up, but there was a line out the door of people with their kids.
I could have said that.
Problem is, they said Bluey was going to be there, and their version of Bluey, this is from Fox 5 in Las Vegas, was just one of their employees in a very cheap Bluey costume. If I show it to you, you're going to realize immediately why everybody was upset.
You got to fight them. You got to fight whoever's in that suit. You got to fight whoever set that up.
This guy is wearing what looks like a kind of a Bluey raincoat. Oh, he looks a little like you, Tony. He's got the beard.
Don't disrespect me. I would never disrespect Bluey like that.
So the people were furious over this. And they also had the restaurant Dirt Dog also had, which by the way, looks really good. It has like gourmet, extravagant hot dogs. It looks really good. But I don't know how they're going to win everybody's business back now. Parents were furious. They had Bluey on the TVs, but the sound was off. They had face painting, which was really just like a blue paw print on kids' faces. And granted, if you're doing face painting at a big event, you've got to go fast. But here are some of the comments on their Facebook page after this. From Kevin, who took his kid to this. Timu Bluey costume and decorations from Dollar Tree. Thanks for ruining my 3-year-old's day. Another parent said, about to request a 1v1 brawl with whoever made this event. Real talk.
Told you. Got the hands.
You're with it, aren't you?
Gotta go 30.
Another one said, this place knows it's dead wrong for having all these kids, moms, and dads show up, and it's just some dude in his PJs. Fox 5 in Vegas actually talked to a kid. They didn't say how old this kid was, but this kid, Sophia, looked like she was about 6. And here's what she said on camera. Quote, when I saw him, I just ignored him. I was mad. He looked like unexpected. You could see his beard. End quote.
6-year-old said that? That's a great. I've seen worse quotes from people in their 40s. Shout out to Sophia.
She looked livid in the clip that I saw.
No, she sounded livid.
Dirt Dog Management said that they're sorry. They didn't really think it was going to turn out like this. They had every intention of putting on a good event that everyone was going to like. They're going to try to do it again and do it the right way.
No, refund now.
Finally, Russ, what do you think is the going rate for a feather to buy a single feather of an extinct bird?
100,000.
Okay, that's a very high guess. It's not that high.
Oh.
That's okay. So it's from a New Zealand bird called the huia, which was last confirmed being seen in 1907. And this single feather was expected initially to get about $3,000 at auction. It's in great condition. The record for a feather at auction is about $6,300. So that's a high bar to clear. They're thinking maybe this would get about half that. It broke the record by getting a winning bid of $28,417 US. The huia was a small songbird known for its jumping ability and beautiful plumage. The feathers are sacred to the Maori people and heavily restricted by law as far as who can own these, who could even bid in an auction like this and pay over $28,000 for a feather. The bird went extinct because of collectors and fashion merchants in the early 1900s and late 1800s.
Sound like a weed synonym.
A hooya?
Yep.
This does sound like you call that. That was some weed.
You got some hooya? You could add it to the list, Tone. That's the news.
Oh, what a fun episode of Sports Adjacent today. We had a good old time.
You got any more synonyms, Tone? You want to throw them in?
I would, but we got to go.
Oh, okay. All right.
Your tone was getting yelled at on the other end, I saw. So when Tone got to put the fingers up, we got to go.
Make with that bottle, big dog.
Right. We like to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of Sports Adjacent. As always, we like to thank our great sponsor, Sheets and Giggles. Go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Use our promo code sports. That is sports, SPORTS, to get a discount with our friends at Sheets and Giggles. Go ahead and get the sheet set, couple sets, to be honest, because it's hot. You got to change those joints by the week. Keep them clean. No crumbs.
If you spill on them.
Yeah, I was about to say no crumbs in the bed, please. Please, no crumbs. Be an adult. We're also brought to you by BetMGM. It is playoff time. You can make bets if you would like with our friends at BetMGM using our promo code adjacent1000. That is adjacent1000. Get up to $1,500 back in free betting credit. BetMGM, the king of sports books. Tone, anything before we let the fine folks go?
No, not much, man. Just, you know, feel free to eat in your own bed if that's your choice.
No,
absolutely not.
If you make that choice, you're making the wrong choice.
Absolutely not.
In your bed.
Be an adult.
Tone, you got any other advices about the five senses? Like if people put mittens on or rubber gloves, maybe they'll be able to see and hear better?
Yeah, like if you take one away and then use the other ones, you should be good.
Take one away that you're not using.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd use your hearing. You would need that. You take away one that you're not using.
Yeah, I mean, just take away any of them and practice making the other one stronger.
Okay, all right.
All right. And we will catch you guys.
All right.
Next week.
Thanks for listening to Sports Adjacent with Jason Leisure and Russell Dorsey. Be sure to download, subscribe, and give the podcast 5 stars. You can check out the latest episode of Sports Adjacent on all digital streaming platforms.
I'm very much adjacent. For a couple hours, I thought I was hood.
But then all that happened, I was like, you know what, James? You adjacent to the mother.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.